Odd Trails is a true paranormal podcast. If you have a story to share, send it to stories@oddtrails.com. Enjoy the show.
Forget facts. Forget logic. Forget everything that seems real. Just trust. Believe.
Did I Jump Dimensions? By Starling. I have had prophetic abilities my whole life. My grandmother says I was blessed with the abilities that allowed her to avoid a nasty car accident, a story you told in a previous episode. For most of my life, I have sort of used my extrasensory gifts as a party trick. In the last story I submitted, I had mentioned a time during a rainstorm where I predicted there would be a yellow motorcycle on the side of the road. We got to the bottleneck of traffic, and sure enough, there on the shoulder was a yellow motorcycle, with everyone rubbernecking to look until traffic cleared. Some other things. My girlfriend used to tell me about the dogs that she would see at work. One night I kept thinking, the first dog she sees tomorrow is going to be yellow. I didn't tell her this, but when she came home the next day, she told me that all day long, she only saw yellow dogs. A golden retriever, a yellow lab, then a blonde mutt of some sort. All day long, all she saw was yellow dogs, which was really out of the ordinary for her. Perhaps the worst thing my predictive abilities ever revealed to me was how my mom would die. I used to have this fear when I was little, of my mom getting in cars and going places. The adults in my life thought it was because, at that time, if you wanted to write parents out of a movie or TV show, they would die in a car accident. I grew out of it, but I still had this idea that my mom would die in a car accident. Well, when I was 15, my mom was driving me home from a weekend at my dad's. We got in a really bad accident, and she passed away. This all leads me to this story. I was driving home after a very long night shift, so unfortunately I was driving a little drowsy. I had the radio up and the AC blasting just to help me stay alert. I stopped at a red light and tried to think of the conversation I would have when I got home. Just something else to keep me engaged. The light turned green, and I made my turn. Then I felt a jolt. Something hitting me from my left side. It wasn't painful, though. Just something I sort of felt. Then I turned my head, and saw a blue car running its red light and coming straight towards me. It slammed into me. I was hit fast and hard, and before I knew it, I was upside down. My car had flipped over, and I was in the air. Then, right as I was about to slam onto the ground, I heard a loud horn, and I was jerked awake. I was still sitting at the light, behind the white line on the ground. The light had turned green, and the car behind me was impatient for me to move. I started to take my foot off the brake, when a blue car zoomed through the intersection, running their red light. It was the exact same blue car I saw in my dream state. I took the turn, shaken, and got home safe. I don't drive drowsy anymore, but I thank that drowsy moment for keeping me out of the intersection when that person pulled through. A friend suggested that maybe I jumped dimensions. I haven't really noticed anything different or off since then. What do you all think? Did I have a prophetic dream? Or did I jump into another reality where I fell asleep rather than getting hit?
The Night the Frogs Went Silent by Anonymous. It was the fall of 96. Hale Bop was streaming by, and my best friend and I had just finished clay pigeon shooting as the sun was starting to go down. We grabbed a six-pack from the fridge and decided to drive to an open field around 4 miles away, only a few short minutes from home. When we arrived at the field, we found a parking spot facing the road we had just driven in on, next to a tree, and we settled in for a night of listening to music, shooting the breeze, and of course, splitting the six-pack. We noticed something seemed off right away. The frogs in the area were normally going strong due to the unreasonably warm weather, but that night, they weren't making a peep. We quickly shrugged it off and started our night. Things were going well for the first half hour after sunset. We were nursing our second beer, and we heard a large tree branch snap in a strip of woods to the right of where we were parked, about 300 feet away. We quickly turned down the radio and scanned the tree line for movement. We didn't see anything, but a few seconds later we heard a strange metallic sound coming from the woods. It sounded like two sheets of steel rubbing together, creating an almost musical sound. That caught our attention for a few minutes, and we listened more, but we didn't hear it again. After that, we settled down and started talking again, but the radio stayed off. As we chatted, we heard another branch snap in a different location, followed by a metallic sound that was similar in pitch but different in sequence. That was when things started to go from bizarre to horrifying. We scanned the woods, looking and listening for movement. Then a series of lights rose above the tree line to the west of us. We both looked at it, and at first dismissed it as a helicopter or a plane, continuing to keep our focus on the strip of woods to the north of where the sounds were coming from. My friend looked over in the direction of the lights again, while I stayed focused on the woods. He yelled, "Oh my God, it's a UFO!" Looking back in the direction of the woods, I started to tell him to shut up, but I fell short when I understood what I was seeing. Flying just above the tree line and quickly approaching us was a massive craft. It was a saucer-shaped craft, and it had rings of light flashing in rotation along the midsection. It was larger in length than a jumbo jet, and that length or more all the way around. It was a non-reflective black, and I can only guess that because its ring of alternating lights was so extremely bright, but didn't reflect on the craft at all. As we watched this thing draw closer to where we were sitting, I began to panic. We were talking with each other, trying to decide if we should leave or try to stay unnoticed under the tree, if such a thing were possible. After a short back and forth, we decided to leave. As it was almost over us, I started the engine while glancing at the instrument panel to make sure that it had started. I looked at the time. It was 9:33 p.m. I then slammed my foot on the gas. We rolled out from under the tree and flew down the little trail that we had driven in on, bouncing over every gopher mound and slamming into every low spot that we passed. With a quick right, we slid onto the gravel road. I pushed the gas even harder as I straightened out the car from the slide. I was quickly approaching the next turn. My friend was scanning the sky to see if the craft was in pursuit. I yelled, "Do you see it?" "No," he replied. We were both out of breath and struggling to fully understand what was happening. He turned around in his seat to face forward again and started yelling at me because we were nearly at our next turn and I was still traveling at a high rate of speed to take a fairly sharp left. I was still scanning the sky just before I turned back and realized he was right. I jumped on the brake and worked hard to slow our momentum while taking a left turn. The car shuddered as it slid on the gravel road. I worked to correct it and nearly flipped the car in the process. As we started down that road and the car worked to return to a high rate of speed, we quickly approached the first house on the road. It belonged to a wealthy family and was absolutely huge. That was when I got a good idea of just how massive this craft really was, because as I passed the three-story home, the craft was passing over it in our direction. I screamed at my friend that I found it. He yelled, "Where?" "On top of us," I yelled back. He stuck his head out the window and yelled, "Oh, shit!" Through all the panic, I recalled that we still had a shotgun in the vehicle. I yelled at him to grab it, and he did. He loaded it and began to lean out the window with the gun in hand to shoot at the object. I reached over with my free hand to grab his shirt while trying to drive with the other. That was the last thing I remember. The gun never went off. The next moment of conscious thought was that we were both sitting in our seats in the car about half a mile away from the huge house we had just passed. I looked around and realized we were completely stopped, just sitting still. I asked, "What the hell? Why are we stopped?" Then I hit the gas again. I asked if he had eyes on it. He said yes. It was flying away. I stopped and looked as it made a 45-degree climb and zipped away. We returned to his house and ran inside to tell his mom. I looked at the clock and it was 2:15 a.m. Remember, we had left the field at 9:33. This was about a 10-minute drive from the field to his house. I didn't piece it all together until a couple of weeks later. I spent the first 3 days not sleeping, and when I did sleep, I had extremely bizarre dreams about three beams of white light rolling around on the ground and post-apocalyptic dreams of walking down valleys with human skulls and bones protruding from the dirt. Weeks later, I spoke to my friend again and I asked him questions about our experience. When I got to the subject of missing time, he shut down and said he didn't want to talk about it again. I might never figure out what happened after he leaned out the passenger window with that gun, but maybe it's best that way. Have you ever had an unwanted thought get completely stuck in your head? Not just unsettling, but like looping in a way that feels deeper than that? Maybe you found yourself spiraling into endless what-if scenarios, replaying disturbing mental images, or questioning yourself with thoughts like, "What if I'm capable of something terrible?" Here's the reality. Almost everyone experiences intrusive thoughts at some point. People just don't talk about them because they can be violent, frightening, or even taboo. But when those thoughts start feeling stuck and cause significant distress, it could be a sign of obsessive compulsive disorder, OCD. OCD grabs onto the thoughts and can convince you that they mean something about who you are, even though they don't. That's what makes OCD so exhausting. The fears can feel incredibly real, and many people end up struggling quietly. On top of that, not every therapist is trained to properly treat OCD, which makes reaching out even harder. So people try to manage it on their own through mental or physical rituals, even though those don't actually bring lasting relief. But there is something that helps when you're dealing with OCD, specialized therapy. And that's why I want to tell you about NoCD. With NoCD, you can access virtual therapy specifically designed to treat OCD. Their licensed therapists understand even the most difficult to talk about symptoms. And more importantly, they know how to treat them. Every NoCD therapist is trained in exposure and response prevention and ERP, which is the most proven treatment for OCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans, including United Healthcare, Aetna, Cigna, and others, helping make treatment more accessible and affordable. They also offer support between sessions, so you're not navigating this alone. If you think you might be struggling with OCD, don't wait. Go to nocd.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with their team and learn more about how they can help. That's nocd.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call.
Know When to Let Go by Minnie Kurist. Reflecting back on these events, I'm struck with nostalgia. Finding your tribe, even for a moment, can last forever. But if all had gone well, I wouldn't be writing this. It was the 90s, and I was in my 20s. I had a circle of friends that were everything to me. When my sister from another mother, who I'll call Pamela, died, the whole circle dissolved. Without getting too deep into it, I've had dreams accurately predicting deaths since I was a child. It usually concerns people I know personally. I believe I inherited it. I have a rather auspicious bloodline, legitimately traced back to renowned heroes of history. But this was the first time I had many dreams warning me of a singular death. Different angles, same outcome. Pamela was going to die. The last dream showed Pamela leaving with death personified, followed by her old roommate and friend, Mary. The next night, Pamela died in a car wreck. A death that replicated the exact circumstances in the first dream I had. That same night, around the time of the wreck, I was awakened by what I now know was Pamela's spirit. In the dark, I felt, rather than heard, a question. If I had to choose between being a vegetable and being dead, which would I choose? Dead, I mumbled groggily. In the days before the funeral, I noticed weird, vaguely threatening markings on the side of Pamela's house that called to mind one of those foreboding dreams. It convinced me to act. I contacted Mary and helped her leave the county for a while. I believed she might be in danger too. Not long after, I moved an hour and a half away for work. But Mary couldn't leave behind the guy she started dating. I'd seen him at the wake. He looked like trouble. Within a year, she was pregnant and moved back to the old digs with him. On the one-year anniversary of a road trip Pamela and I had taken together, I asked a couple of friends from the circle to retrace it with me. Pamela had promised we'd do it again, so I expected some sign. We stopped at the same places, the tiny restaurant, the festival, the shops. At the haberdashery, I saw it. Her old car. The exact color, make, and model, parked right next to us. On the drive home, something clicked. I used my rearview mirror to corner Mary. She knew something about what happened to Pamela. Under pressure, part of it came out. The night Pamela wrecked her car, there were two other cars on the road. One belonged to a drug dealer, and the other to her boyfriend. They had gone sideways on a deal. They caused Pamela to run off the road. The part she didn't say, but my gut fills in, is that Mary was in the car with him. She couldn't admit it, and I couldn't bring myself to ask. In the years that followed, I watched Mary go downhill. Drugs, abuse, teeth lost, stitches, several kids she couldn't take care of. A marriage to the same man. He was in and out of jail. Periodically, I would buy them groceries, clothes, and give them rides. She called me once in the middle of the night, stranded and pregnant. Other times, she complained about him endlessly. What she didn't tell me was always worse. One afternoon, while I was asking her for help putting together an outfit, she began picking up still wet dog poop from her carpet in a manic rush. She skipped soap and rags and fired up the rug shampooer. It aerated the entire home in a poopy mist. I'd never been so disgusted. That was the moment something broke. Not long after, I moved away for the last time. Before leaving town, I drove by her place. She and her husband had matching Mercedes parked out front. When Pamela died the way she did, with all those dreams and occurrences, I felt the deepest loss, because I knew there would never be another friend like her. Pamela would have forgiven Mary. I tried to carry that, but eventually I let go. At long last, it wasn't my monkeys and wasn't my circus. If you ever have a friend like Pamela, hang on to them. The rest aren't worth it.
Something Circling My Cabin by Pet From 88. So my family has owned a cottage in North Ontario for more than 50 years, and last summer, something very creepy happened to me up there. I was hoping for any explanations. Our cottage is quite small, so my cousins and I sleep out in a separate bedroom that we built outside. We called it the bunkie. I woke up before my cousins to what I thought was someone walking toward the bunkie, but when the sound didn't stop, I realized someone was actually circling the bunkie. It was the sound of shod feet treading on our loose stone driveway. It was light out, and from my bed, I could see out the window, so I was just waiting, totally petrified with fear, for someone's head to pop up as they circled, but no head popped up. I don't know if I'm just paranoid, but I was so afraid and I felt so exposed, like nothing I'd ever felt out there. The sound didn't stop for a long time, and honestly, I didn't want to scare my younger cousin who was asleep beside me. After mustering up some courage, I crawled onto the floor and grabbed my phone to call my dad. My cousin woke up at this point and I told her what was going on. My dad came out. My cousins didn't fear anything and weren't afraid. My dad looked around a bit but told me it was probably just an animal. But animals have pretty soft feet. So how could it have sounded like shoes circling? It could have been a deer, but why would a deer be circling our bunkie? And how come I didn't see it out the window? I don't know, but I would appreciate any answers. Honestly, I do believe in the paranormal, and I respect folklore, so whatever seems logical to you, I'm all ears.
I know I don't have this ring. By Jess. End of January 2020 was an interesting time, because it was when I bought my incredibly perfect new house, all by my independent self as a single mom of two boys. It was also interesting because I got a promotion and just broke up with my serious partner of 2 years. Positive and negative stress were abound at that point. And then COVID-19 happened. Did I mention I work in the funeral industry? Rewinding to my serious relationship. We had been close friends for 10 years, never confronting our feelings, other than to suppress them, as we both had our reasons. When timing was right, though, we tried it out. Our bond was fast and passionate. He gave me a custom ring for our one-year anniversary. It wasn't an engagement, but a placeholder for the engagement ring to come. It was a black square-cut diamond. Four bands of white gold tentacles held it. Little round, clear diamonds glittered it. The band was the best part. It was two octopus, legs wrapped delicately around my finger, little diamond eyes. I was beyond in love with this ring. He also cheated on me. I guess I was in a crying rage when I stuffed it into my makeup bag. I don't remember. However, when I was unpacking in my new house, I found it in a bag. I do remember the flood of emotion then, as I stomped downstairs and outside to my backyard. I threw it into the dense band of trees and plants behind the house. Some time passed, and I met someone new. I'm looking for some earrings to wear on our second date, and I found this damn ring in my bathroom drawer. I was positive I threw it. Thinking I may have been stressed and grieving, knowing how much I liked it, maybe I kept it. Not this time. I walked across the street, past my neighbor's house to the sign marking the preserve. I threw it as high and far as I could. I had to rush back and finish getting ready to be on time for my new boyfriend to pick me up. I ended up wearing no jewelry, as I look back at pictures years later. I live in southern Florida. My home is in a golf course, nature preserve community. The band of vegetation behind my home is there to control the flooding and has 100-foot pine trees, mature oaks, and 20-foot-tall bird-of-paradise clusters covering the length of the property. Directly across the street, behind my neighbor's house, is a massive wildlife preserve. During heavy summer storms, spontaneously forming flowing water is common, like little creeks. We also had two bad hurricanes in October of 2024 that caused massive flooding all around. That is to say, this isn't an ecosystem that would be friendly for a ring to stick around. But that's only half the problem. I didn't find it in my yard. It's February 2026. I just found it in my bathroom drawer. Beautiful as ever.
I shouldn't have listened to those exorcism tapes by Anonymous. First of all, I'll tell you how this event started. I have a bad habit of watching horror stuff, exorcism videos, paranormal tapes, all that. Well, on this night at around 12 a.m., I was eating dinner and watching the full documentary on Annalise Mikkel. As a quick summary of Annalise, Annalise was a young German girl who became famous because of one of the most disturbing exorcism cases ever recorded. She had seizures, strange behavior, and started hearing voices. Her family believed she was possessed, so two priests performed 67 exorcisms on her. The audio tapes from some of those sessions are extremely intense. Deep voices, growling, screaming. She eventually died at just 23 years old from weakness and not eating. Her case is still debated. Some say mental illness, others say something supernatural. I even listened to those tape recordings, and they are so uncomfortable that they just stay in your mind. After finishing all of that, I went to sleep at around 2:30 a.m., but at 3:30 a.m. I suddenly woke up. I heard some sound in my kitchen. Not a whisper, but more like something fell off a shelf. I went to check, and when I entered the kitchen, I felt this weird pressure, like someone had just put their hand on my shoulder. When I turned back, nobody was there. I got so scared I literally ran back to my room and I tried to sleep, but again, I woke up half an hour later. This time, not from any noise, but just randomly. When I opened my eyes, I saw two faces right in front of my face. Not far, literally right there. I felt like those faces came close and pushed me up. My whole body froze. I can't even explain how scary that moment was. My mind immediately remembered the exorcism voice like it was waking me up. I tried to distract myself. I picked up my phone and I watched some random stuff to try and calm down. I listened to my favorite songs for 10 minutes and I even turned on the light, but still forced myself to sleep again. But it didn't end there. When I finally did sleep, my dog suddenly started vomiting. He had been sleeping peacefully earlier with no issues. I cleaned everything, but then he stood up and started barking at nothing. After that, I tried to sleep again with the lights on, and somehow I slept this time, and that's how the night ended. Now, that night was something else. I don't even know how I controlled myself. The only thing running through my head was, this is just my mind. This is just my mind. Nothing real. But seriously, how can everything happen like that all at once? First, I was trying to sleep, and then suddenly I heard something fall in the kitchen. And it wasn't a small sound. It was a proper loud shelf noise. I thought maybe a cat had come inside or something, but when I checked, I didn't see anything. It was silent and empty. The faces that I saw weren't normal faces. They were dark, weird, and very close to my face. My heart was beating like crazy. And that exorcism voice, it was stuck in my head, just repeating again and again. The scariest part was that my dog never really barks at night, but he started barking on and off like he sensed something. After that, I tried to sleep again, and I heard something like a whisper or a sound from the kitchen again. Not clear, but enough to shake me. That entire night felt like something was happening around me. All of it after listening to that exorcism audio. Sometimes I actually wonder if I accidentally invited something, or was my mind just messing with me? I don't know, man, but that night was hell. Okay, the feedback this week. Resident Evil fan 32 on Spotify referencing episode 220. Thought speak is a real thing when it comes to ETs. I thought that was only from Animorphs. Two things here. Thought speak, I'm assuming, is just kind of like ESP. Is that something that happens in Animorphs?
I do not remember. I remember the Animorphs morphing.
Yeah.
But I don't remember anything about the plot or the abilities or why they even morph to begin with.
Up until pretty recently, I had vivid memories of reading and watching Animorphs, but now that I think about it, I don't think I did. I think I just looked at the covers and skimmed through them. Was there even a TV show, or is that all in my head?
There was. That should not be a Mandela effect. I'm going to lose my mind if there was never a TV show, but I do remember there being a TV show.
Yeah, there was. Yeah, it had two seasons, 1998. So for some reason, I just didn't watch it. I'm actually not an Animorphs kid. I just remember liking the covers.
I remember reading one book, and I want to say they used some sort of sans serif font. That's like my little core memory thing. I think so. Like, I'm not just making that up.
The font in a physical book is really important to how you enjoy it or how you experience the book.
It is. On a computer, I definitely prefer Arial, Helvetica. That's a beautiful one. Calibri, I eventually warmed up to. Hate Aptos, though. Never will use it.
Mm-hmm.
But it goes without saying, a physical book, paperback, hardback, doesn't matter what kind of back, even Times New Roman beats out all of those. You got to have those sweet serifs around the edges.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you.
Yeah, something about Arial in a physical book just feels very cheap and DIY in a bad way.
I don't like Ariel at all.
No, no, not in a book. Anyway, next.
Angela Dom says, they're referring to all of my silverware disappearing, I completely understand the spoons and dip cups. We used to joke and say there is a hole in space that sucks these things up. And then someday, when we're all dead and gone, we're going to find it all. There will be planets full of these things, and nobody wants them because they don't need them anymore. This includes socks, hangers, pens, and pencils.
Okay.
I remember looking online about the disappearing socks thing because it doesn't make any sense. People are saying, like, look in your dryer, thank me later. Like, yeah, right. Yeah, all of my socks have just disappeared into my dryer.
If only it were that easy.
That would be funny if you die and you end up like on a planet where it's all just forks and spoons that went missing.
Yeah, I feel like that would just look like a Goodwill after they have a huge sale.
Yeah.
You're left with volume 2 of a Russian cookbook with a missing dust cover, plastic bags of mismatched puzzle pieces.
So the next one, River Ryan, also referencing this silverware thing, they said it's normally equated to the Fae. They've taken an interest in you. It's been happening to my family and me for years. Anywhere I went, the forks would just disappear. My mom and grandma died thinking I stole the good forks in high school to fork someone's yard. Is forking a yard a thing?
Yeah, yeah. It's like toilet papering, except you stick forks into the grass and just make it inconvenient for people to pick up.
Oh, okay. Okay, it's a harmless prank. Okay.
Well, technically, most people use plastic forks, so not so much, but yeah.
Good point, yeah. Then they got a bunch of plastic on their hands.
Literally and figuratively. That's kind of interesting that they have forks that are missing and not spoons.
Mm.
I think I have a theory as to why spoons might disappear, and it doesn't really solve it, but you can use a spoon for pasta and cereal.
Yeah.
But you can't use a fork for cereal. That took a while to connect back together, but spoons are just more versatile, so they get lost more. That's it. In my experience, at least.
That could make sense. But for us, it's like waves of certain silverware specifics go disappearing.
Flavor of the week.
Yeah, it is the flavor of the week. I guess it all depends on what the Fae want.
I guess so.
There was something that I wanted to bring up. Oh, you know what? It has to do with the exorcism tape story that I was talking about. Let's move on to that real quick.
Okay.
So yeah, this one was cool because I can totally relate to this story, and I've read up a lot on this kind of stuff. Annalise Mikkel, the person that had all of these exorcisms, they were listening to their tapes. And I don't know, do you remember listening to these?
No, it was one of those things where I kind of heard about it, but never really committed to checking it out for myself. Probably should have by now, all things considered, but yeah, no.
Okay, it was pretty popular for a while. There were pictures of her, which are really disturbing. You can Google pictures of Annalise.
I'm doing that right now.
Make sure you're looking at the ones where she was quote unquote possessed. Really, really creepy, really disturbing. But there are like,
oh,
yeah, there are tapes of her during the exorcism and she's doing like the voice changing and speaking in weird languages and stuff, growling. It's very disturbing to listen to.
No, this is like on the verge of ruining my night. That is creepy.
These recordings, though, during the file sharing years, what were you using?
Napster, Kazaa, LimeWire, Morpheus. I did it all. Never got into BearShare, though.
I downloaded these tapes on Morpheus. They're extremely disturbing. And what I think it is I think we're just flooding our nervous system with disturbing content. And we have a hyper-aware, hyper-anxious nervous system afterwards. And we all know that your mind can play tricks on you. And I think that's what's happening in these kinds of stories. I don't think that possessions are real, though.
Okay, that's a hot take.
Yeah, one fact that really swayed me on this was that possessions don't really occur in non-believers or those that aren't exposed to the religious phenomenon in their lives.
Yeah, it's like when you see exorcisms on stage at a church and the person who's supposedly possessed by a demon, they're just, I don't know, it's so theatrical, so performative, it's really hard to believe and take it seriously as something genuine. Now, I do believe that demonic possession is possible, 100%, but everything I've seen, especially out of like mega churches, just screams people buying into their own BS, or maybe they were brainwashed into thinking that they were possessed. Something doesn't line up, though.
Absolutely. They are following along with what they are seeing. You're just kind of copying what other people are doing and you're starting to believe it and it becomes kind of natural.
Yeah, it's all just really tricky because we might want to say that something is a demonic possession because maybe that's even less scary than the thought of losing your mind or having a mental episode. I also think a lot of it is suggestibility, like with hypnosis. But if you were to walk up to somebody who's on the ground thrashing around and squealing, screaming, tell them that their car is getting towed, parked in a handicap spot, shame on you, now you're going to go to hell and get a ticket on your way there, they would snap out of it. I promise you, they'd snap out of it.
Oh, 100%. I've seen people like code switch at church so quickly between speaking in tongues and speaking normal. And here's another thing. Speaking in tongues always used to be like a very mysterious thing to me because I saw it so much. But when I was doing it, I was pretending. I was definitely pretending. I believed I was doing something real, but I was just pretending and copying what other people were doing.
Good boy.
What I really want to talk about, though, is how our brains have this region that's specific to detecting faces called the FFA. And I was reading about this because you were telling me about how when you were falling asleep, you sometimes like see faces and stuff, right?
Yeah, and it's not even like pareidolia. I think I said that right.
Okay.
Yeah, it's this pitch blackness. You would think I wouldn't see it, like you would like see a face in the clouds or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, whatever pitch black pareidolia might be, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, our brain is hyper-tuned to detect faces, and it's like a big part of our brain. Like exactly when you see clouds or patterns on wood grain or wallpapers.
Light switch.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I mean outlet, light outlet.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
The shocked emoji, yeah.
Yeah, that's basically just your brain doing its job. And this is probably why you, when you're drifting off to sleep, you're seeing that.
Yeah, in my case, I don't know if it would be like a hyperactive imagination or just nonstop daydreaming, basically, even though I'm in the process of going to sleep, because in my waking state, I'll just be coming up with random scenarios playing out, full-on stories and characters that they don't mean anything. They don't go anywhere. It's just mundane. Yeah, I can't really turn it off, but continue.
I think that stories like this, where the person is seeing things like faces and stuff, like many others like it, I think it can be a result of exposure and suggestion rather than this real attachment. Just somebody having a very scary experience due to their exposure and the suggestions of the exorcism and stuff.
Yeah, that checks out.
We have heard stories of attachments and they're very different than this. They're way more personal and ongoing. This was just like the person had a bad experience one night after listening to some scary tapes. I can totally empathize with that. I've been there. I think we've all been there.
Yeah, it feels like stolen valor if I get too sad during a war movie, but what's the verdict?
Author, I don't think this was a real attachment, and I think you can rest easy. I don't think you got anything attached to you. I think you're good to go.
Oh, okay. Well, in that case, let's go ahead and delete this one off the shelves. Get you a paranormal story to narrate this episode.
No. I'm not here to be a skeptic. I'm here to help. I don't think that anything's attached to you. It doesn't read like that. I was trying to find any way I could explain this away because I've had similar experiences.
Yeah. I gotcha. Let's jump dimensions on over to Starling's story, shall we?
Yeah, I want to talk about this.
With that strong feeling that she had about her mom dying in a car accident when she was a kid, and then it happened, I kind of wonder if we should maybe, I don't know, like change how we look at childhood fears, how we should consider what they actually mean.
Yeah.
Because we all have some sort of overlap. Like some kids are really scared of clowns and they don't know why. I guess we do have theories on that. But like, you know, little things that wouldn't necessarily make sense to most of us, like bring out the olives on Maury.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's definitely sad. Feel bad laughing, but you know, it is what it is. That's my personal coping mechanism. What I'm trying to get at though is I wonder if there's a greater meaning behind that. What did her childhood look like, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I was actually talking with my therapist today about how when I was younger, I used to look at things in my room and they would look weird to me, like late at night, if I woke up from a dream, I'd look at like the air conditioning vent and it would look weird to me and it just stuck with me. And now when I look at certain things, I'm terrified. It's kind of like the olives thing. I have a hard time looking at vents. It's weird.
Vents? I haven't heard of that one. Wow. So what about like gutters?
No, gutters are fine. It's mostly things that you would see in your room at night. just having this weird surreal liminal experience, kind of like a David Lynch scene where he just narrows in on like a lamp or something in a room and it feels
right,
wrong.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I used to get that feeling when I would look at certain things, and AC vents for some reason were one of them.
And for the record, I meant to say storm drain. Those really wide storm drains.
Oh, yeah. Those are creepy.
That you could probably squeeze into if you really wanted to.
One time on a walk, I saw a raccoon in one. He just popped up and said, hey. Like, he just popped up and looked at me. It was super cute.
That is cute. Just came by to say, hey. I used to want to go down there, pull out one of those, like, manhole covers and just go exploring. Not the best idea, but I know people have.
Yeah, they do that in that movie, Now and Then. They go down to the storm drain. That always scared me. That scene was really scary.
There's another really good one they do it in. It's like these teenagers. I think they're turtles and they know martial arts. That's pretty cool.
I have heard of that.
They eat a lot of pasta.
Pizza. Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
There's some mouse that teaches them kung fu.
A yellow jumpsuit or something. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me started. Triggered.
Oh, man. This was a fun episode. I'm glad we were able to get together, considering your crazy schedule right now.
Yeah, no kidding. So much more to say about Sterling's story, but it is getting late for us. And
yeah,
no more woe is me. It's been a week, though. The episode's already coming out late. I still have to edit, so yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. Make sure you send your stories into stories@oddtrails.com. Join our Patreon for ad-free versions of all of our episodes at a higher bitrate at patreon.com/oddtrails. Check out the new episodes of my other podcast, Let's Not Meet, and the Old Time Radio Cast, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week. Stay safe.
Peace out.
Don't let the ghosts and the ghouls disturb you, darling.